Hi everyone, today we're going to talk about Once Ghosted, Twice Shy, a Reluctant Royals novella by Alyssa Cole. While her boss the prince was busy wooing his betrothed, Lakotsi had her own love affair after swiping right on a dating app. But her romance had ended in heartbreak, and now, back in New York City again, she's determined to rediscover her joy, so of course she runs into the woman who broke her heart. When Lakotsi and Fabiola meet again on the stalled subway train months later, Fab asks for just one cup of tea. Lakotsi, hoping to know why she was unceremoniously dumped, agrees. Tea and food soon lead to them exploring the city together and their past, with Fab slowly revealing why she let Lakotsi go, and both of them wondering if they can turn the second chance into their happily ever after. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Rebecca.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. It truly feels like it's been a while. I know we just recorded like last week or 2 weeks ago, but it feels like it's been a really long time since we've sat down to talk about Lesbic.
It's been a minute since we've sat down to like really geek out about books. So I'm super stoked to geek out about books with you. Mm-hmm. I also, you know, am like many people and had technical equipment fail me during
Mercury in retrograde.
Whatever this is. So I have my computing device back, so hopefully the echo won't be here anymore. We'll find out after we stop recording.
How have you been?
I'm doing well. I am back at my day job in person, so that's been a little bit of a renegotiation of clicking back on mentally in other ways and what that job now looks like when you are in person and things like that. So, yeah, you know, no real updates. Reading when I can, playing a little bit of, you know, a video game here and there. And when we do stream TV, we stream all of it, and we just watch Padma Lakshmi's Taste of America, where she goes to different communities and talks about how the food has basically worked as a unifying bracer to maintain community sense of self, but also have other people come into your community and find you less intimidating because people don't know how to talk to each other, I guess. But it's really good. I really enjoyed it. And I really love streaming services because they don't edit their profanity as much, so it just feels more legit.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I love her.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
So Padma dropped some wonderful, wonderful very colorful.
Well, The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is about to break the fourth wall, which is very exciting. Those of you who have been following along with me, waiting for the bombs to drop about Denise Richards and Brandy Glanville's alleged lesbian love affair, know what I'm talking about. But there, I'm excited to see sort of the curtain rise on that show and really demonstrate, like, these are forced situations. These are kind of like unreal relationships, and what happens when they start acknowledging that on the television show that puts them into those situations.
In my head, I'm just seeing, I don't, Vicky's still on it. That's back from 10
Vicky
years ago, right?
Fired, yeah.
Oh, see, I don't know. I'm just like picturing somebody from a decade ago turning to the camera and giving a soliloquy like Hamlet or something.
No, so what Denise does is they start in the commercials that they've shown so far, you see her start to like gesture to turn off the cameras. And when that doesn't happen, she just says, bravo, bravo, bravo. And they've put in the commercial like, bravo, better cut this, or else I'm not going to film anymore. So I wonder what they'll do with that.
Getting your dollars, Caitlin. They're handling their marketing well. They're getting your dollars. You care.
Yeah. Like many things in our life, Bravo has had to have, it seems like, some tough conversations. They fired people for racism, homophobia, and definitely it seems like more firings and recalibrations of their show are going to continue. It's just interesting to see as a consumer.
I don't know. Dumpster fires of 2020. Hopefully we can see better when this year is over and Phoenix rise out of the ash. And, you know, as it's burning, I'm going to keep throwing logs on the fires that need to rage. So.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, in the cool down time when we're all grabbing some water and hydrating, I like to read. I asked if you would read Once Ghosted, Twice Shy, and you happily obliged. And I'd really like to talk to you about that.
The look on my face right now that I'm just giving Rebecca is just utter joy. This was such a delight of a read. That's the only word I can say. This is my first time reading anything by Alyssa Cole. This was my entrance point to her Reluctant Royals series, which, from what I can tell, and by that I mean I did extensive research on Cole after this because I am a little obsessed, seems to be heterosexual romance, although from what I can tell on her reviews, her books do have a ton of representation of the LGBTQ community. They might not be the two MCs in all of her books, but they are there. They have voices. They have like big roles to play in these stories.
And her MCs are super diverse, and body capabilities are super talked about, and race and history and what it means to be a person within different bodies that are seen by people. Like, I yes, read Cole. I've read That Could Be Enough as well. And if you're a fan of Hamilton, I'm not giving anything away. That is a book I highly recommend you pick up. I cannot scream loud enough right now, and I won't because that's not good for audio quality. But Alyssa Cole's library of work is, do yourself a summer favor and give yourself permission to get lost for a few hours. It's worth it. And it's just worth it to yourself to just kind of seep into her characters. You're smiling like a banshee. This is great.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you find a new author whose voice is so strong and whose perspective on romance is so nuanced and interesting, and it's like a breath of fresh air when you are discovering a person's voice for the first time. And I really felt that when reading Cole, and it was just it sort of I haven't been in the mood to read. I haven't really been feeling the love for lesfic over the past couple weeks, to be honest. And this was like the shot in the arm that I needed to be like, yes, okay, this is why I love these stories. This is why I want to do this project, is because I get to find amazing writers like this.
We have not discussed what we're going to discuss. We made the agreement on this one just to come to the table without sharing notes. So I don't know where you want to go with it, but I'm warning you in advance. I'm going to geek out on this book hard, and you may need to tell me to simmer down.
Okay. Let's
This.
set the scene, Rebecca.
No,
When the
I want to set this scene for you this time. May I steal the
Okay.
opening?
You may.
Caitlin, this book opens with somebody on a train that stops for a random amount of unbeknownst time before they're going to get to their location. As a person who still lives in and deals with public transit at the level that MTA is with the DC equivalency, how did you feel in this opening?
Well, yeah, it struck a chord. I've been there. There's nothing, I thought it was such a brilliant opening because there's nothing like public transit. There's nothing like being on the subway or being on the metro where you only focus on like your inner monologue and your inner dialogue. And like, I come up with all of my biggest plans and like wildest dreams on public transportation. So this tracked for me. So we have Lucchese, who is, quote, the mother of schedules and slayer of inefficiencies.
I wrote that down too. I was like, so say it again, because this struck so much for me with the people that I am spoiled to be around in my life. So say the line again, Lakotsis.
Lucchese is the mother of schedules and slayer of inefficiencies, which
Ah.
I'm putting on my business card. Like, I have a somewhat similar job to Lucchese, who is the chief of staff essentially to the prince of this fantastical African country. And she and he are in New York because in the previous book, he has found love with a woman, and he's sort of like enjoying his relationship, enjoying his romance, and he's given his chief of staff the weekend off. You know, he and his new person have said, like, stop planning for us, like, we got it, go do a thing. And so Lucozzi has a list of things that she wants to do in New York City. It's her first time off in a really long time, and she's stuck on the train.
Yeah, and the conductor, there's so many little moments of other people who have very, very brief seconds as characters to influence us. But the snark of the conductor with, we'll be moving shortly, maybe. You know, like, I don't really know, but I'm required to tell you something. And then the second time we get the conductor on the line, you can't even understand what they're saying because public transit speaker systems are absolute crap. Yeah, so we have Lucozzi on the train, dapper as hell, like in this amazing outfit, and this narrative that will start to be strung in the background about when she received a new pair of shoes for the holidays and her parents saying, you know, shoes are to face forward, they're to move. And we get that nature over and over again about, you know, your shoes face forward so you can go forward. And it's just such a wonderful nugget you get early about, you know, the idea of shedding something that was once in your life and you no longer have him wanting to restart, because we know Lucozzi is kind of, you know, heartbroken and thinking about, oh, there's this person I'd rather be kissing on New Year's. They're in the winter season, but that's not an option. And this like rebuilding you do when you're trying to start fresh, and starting fresh in the winter always feels counterintuitive because everything's trying to hibernate and you're just trying to find movement in your life again. And the visuals in this were just so strong for me. I very rarely say make something into a film, but like this would work. Mm-hmm. This just had constant movement for me that it would be stimulating in other venues as well.
Mm-hmm. So let's return back to, she's on the train. Mm-hmm. What happens?
She's on the train. She's going through all these emotions in her head, and then her phone goes off, and her phone should be super protected as she is a member. She works for the court, and she's like, well, I don't think I was hacked. And it's basically, you know, somebody's hitting on her, and she's looking
through
around
airdrop,
through airdrop. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So she's looking around and trying to figure out, you know, is it the teenagers who are probably tech savvy? The woman with the store-bought fake imitation gloves, red imitation gloves, I think, or various people in that deduction. So we're taking more and more of the world. And then eventually we find out it is Fab, the woman who broke her heart, as we know very little about at this point. Mm-hmm. And she not only slides into her DMs, but slides into the seat. And this is where our story really kind of kicks off.
Yeah. It's so, there's so much you can talk about with the structure, and I do want to come back to the structure in a little bit, but you're right, like there's so much movement. So very quickly we learn that the two of them had a brief, which should have been a 3-night stand, that turned pretty serious, and we learn that Fab ghosted Lucozzi, and like in a very abrupt way, like kind of out of nowhere, when both of them were starting to visibly develop feelings. Fab says, let's get a cup of coffee. Let's do this. And she finally gets Lucozzi off Canal Street, eating dim sum and drinking tea.
All right. She convinces her to go. Not that there probably needed to be much, but, you know, you need to justify to yourself while you're putting yourself in a situation that you are trying to move past by going, well, even if you're not hungry, you like tea, and they have tea. And then we get, you know, this manic talking from Fab. She's talking the whole time over the ambient noise that's loud around her as they're consuming dim sum and punching off their passport worth of food. And we all know I'm a sucker for any author who writes about food without negativity. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, oh, this is great. And I want to piggyback off of both food in this and what you were doing with Ghosted, because we get a lot of moments with Lucozzi where she's unfamiliar with the slang because it's not the same slang familiar to her from home. So it's explained, ghosted's explained to her at some point. And I think it's a really genius mechanism when writing characters that are in their world using language that, of course, they would use, that all readers may not be familiar with, to then have a character that gives the reader permission to have it explained to them. And where I would feel most readers understand what ghosted is, it gives us permission, for example, later in the book, when she uses the word brick to mean cold, that there's that same, wait, what are you saying? And the explanation. I think just for character writing, it's so smart. So smart. And where, you know, I've been given tools in my life to infer what things mean or to go look them up, it gives me the opportunity as a reader to not have to and to keep flipping to the next page. And I just think it's a genius form of writing to do that. Anyway, so they're eating dim sum, drinking tea. Fob is chatting nervously away. Any of us do that. Some of us more than others. The one thing I do want to say, too, before we move too far into this, we learn before Fob shows up about when she and Lakatsi met and swiping together on an app, like a dating app. And Fob's profile only had 7 words. It said math, jewelry, and dressing down is giving in. What a badass profile name. I just... like, or just all of it is just, and it plays in. And the reason too I bring it up is because we have this idea of who she is in these tall heels and put together and super posh and building this jewelry. And then when we see her within the text of the novel, she's wearing a cap that gets commented on all the time, like a cheap knitted cap. And her body just looks fatigued. Her clothes aren't as vibrant as always. She's kind of in flats and not standing as tall as she did. And this goes into play into the narrative. So there's all these wonderful little nuggets of hints of before paired with something is definitively wrong right now. And you have all of it given to you, but not in a way that makes it too much of a mystery nor kicks you out too fast. So I was, again, I'm going to geek out about the structure of this book.
Yeah. Well, I think I think we need to unpack just a couple, cause they're like, this is such a dense, I don't mean to like turn into a teacher. There's a lot happening, and you just brought up 2 really important points. The first is that Cole talks a lot about the character's presentation for both of them. So you have Fob, who is first generation American. Her parents are from Haiti, and she, you know, 7 months ago when she and Lakatsi first met, she was described as like a Betty Page pinup girl, you know, red lipstick. She was a jewelry designer, and she had a lot of like goals and dreams for herself. And she was a really vibrant, there's a lot of descriptions of her in wax print clothing and like vibrant colors and being very like confident and assured. And when you're right, when we see her in the winter, so in present time, there's a change. Like we can tell that there's been a shift. She's been just as miserable, perhaps, as Lakatsi. The difference is that Lakatsi is very, like a big part of her identity. And what Fob keeps referring to as she's getting to know her is she's very dapper. She, you know, she's perfectly pressed suits. She's the shoes.
They're tailored to show her curves, but also hide them. And what a genius way to talk about a female body and female identified character who finds power in suits.
It
doesn't over accentuate, but it like lifts up.
Yeah. And it's not,
oh, so good.
Yeah. It's not a femme suit, which I think we see a lot in lesbian, which is a play that I like. I'm into that, but this was so evocative, and I loved, there's a line when they're, I think, on their first date, and Fob is just sort of staring at her, and she makes a passing comment on, like, she has beautiful hands with, like, really well-manicured nails, which, you know, we all look out for.
I love that smile on your face. I reacted harder to, I mean, I appreciate that line. I really love the, it's hard to resist a woman in a sharp suit, but with a soft smile. it's just the kindness given to not heighten femininity clothing presentation.
You also brought up the structure, which both you and I think are geeking out about in our different ways. So do you want to just like unpack, or just for people who haven't read it, like what is the structure of this book? How does sure. Cole lay this out?
So we have time jumps, and what we have is basically Lakatsi waiting to move on, and months later, seasons later, we don't even get months, we get seasons. So we start in winter and then we jump back to the spring. And this is the first time that they swipe the three dates they will inevitably go on. And then we jump back and forth to winter and spring. So we do know what's coming the whole time, but not why. And then when we go back to the spring, we get those moments of like, yes, but we get to get the meet cute and we get to get the kiss. So I like time jump narratives because it's almost like watching a show you're very familiar with. You know, when you go backwards, there's certain things you like can't wait to see happen and hold on to. There's that excitement, and it's different than the angst buildup. I think time is also allowed to move very differently because you get to see aftermath, and aftermath is really powerful. And in a lot of, I would argue in a lot of the books we've talked about, we don't really get too much aftermath. There's kind of this like blow up and, you know, the 70% mark and then the happily ever after. And here we really get to see what it feels like to be weighed down by life when life comes between things that you were really excited about. So, you know, we get this blossoming relationship in the early part of the year and maybe a closure to the relationship at the end of the year. And the winter scene becomes this field trip of the hidden beauty in New York. And they are hitting up these installations and moments in New York and not really talking about the amazing back then. So what do you think of the structure? Did it work for you? Did it throw you out? What?
No, I really liked the structure. I liked that when we're in sort of present in the winter, we're really in Lakatsi's point of view. So we know everything that she knows. And then in the spring, so in the before, we're really in Fob's point of view for the most part. And we know everything that she knows. And it, so for me, it's not just a time jump, but it's also that fun thing when you know exactly why each character is reacting the way that they are, like how they're coming to it. And you get to see each other through their eyes. And
in third person at that, it's not even like a first person shift, which is what I find a lot of people do in their writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good.
It's so good.
So good.
These characters have such a deep connection that I bought into right away. And so to answer your question, yes, the structure worked for me, the chemistry worked for me, the connection worked for me.
Can we talk really fast about their first date and how that happens? Mm-hmm. And what happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they swipe, they agree to meet, and they're meeting, you know, for coffee or tea or whatever. It's during the day, there's no alcohol involved yet, and Lakatsi's late. And of course, like, you give people a certain amount of grace time, but then it's just rude. And we find out she's late such a baller move. Such a baller move. She buys flowers for this date, which is lovely and great and kind and get it, right? But she's also arranged the flowers into a presentation that is more befitting of what she believes should be presented to this woman she's meeting. So there's flecks on her fingers from her moving the flowers around and then repackaging them in the paper plastic that they come in from the bodega. So there's this extra time that went in to a thoughtful gesture. And then there's a line too, a little wonderful little nod with, you know, Fob is like, well, I display flowers. I like to have them, but I always buy them myself. And if that is not a Virginia Woolf, Mrs. Dalloway nod, I'm thoroughly surprised, because Dickinson's moved in there a few times and so are some other people. Like, obviously, Cole has been given a lot of the Western canon in her life, and she drops it in ways that just are refreshing instead of the test and the essay you have to write at the end of the semester. It's so good. It's so good. It's just so good. And then there's a line that both of us wrote down, but I'm gonna let you say it. So
yeah. So they stay long enough that like happy hour is over, And it's full on like nighttime now. It's Saturday. People are dancing. There's just like they're vibing. They're feeling it. And there's a line to describe Lukatsi. She looked like she would politely ask before giving you the best head of your life. Which I think just said like, A, that it's hot. It's hot as hell. It perfectly illuminates their physical chemistry. But it also like throughout this, Lukatsi is just really nice. Like she's a little angsty and can be a little, you know, she has other, yeah, I think she purposefully hides a lot of herself and, like, holds herself in this very proper way because of her job and because of where she's from, but there's like, a thread of just genuine niceness that is such a strong character trait for her that was really interesting, and it's an interesting juxtaposition in these moments where, like, you almost expect her to be a little bit more of, like, a confident asshole, but instead she's just like utterly charming and utterly like kind.
Yeah, it's confidence over cockiness,
mm-hmm.
which is ideally what people would like to obtain, but few of us ever really do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, I mean, even when we finally get to their first kiss, they're you know, dancing. I don't want to give too much of that scene away. I always kind of hope people who haven't read the books go back. And that whole flirt with the dance is just magnificent. And Lukatsi's like, I wanted you to come outside. So when I asked if I could kiss you, I could hear your answer. And Fab goes, yes. And without missing a beat, she goes, well, I haven't asked you yet. And she calls me on it. And I was just like, yeah. And then Fab kisses her and bends to kiss her, because at this time she's always taller in these heels versus in the, you know, the second act of this book in the winter season. She's physically smaller and broken and more pulled in and less confident in herself, which we find out through the course of time, you know, in the course of this spring action, her aunt was deported, and she was asked to come back and take on being the guardian of her cousin. And all of this kind of happens one thing on top of another very quickly before their final date together, where we are treated to this information a little bit earlier. You start to really unpack this super smart writing where Cole has given us all of the insight already. We just finally, it's like a Jeopardy question. We know all the details. We're just trying to get to the really basic, like, what was that one moment? And I just... this is one of the shorter things you and I have discussed, and I feel like we need more time than anything we've talked about.
Yeah. I mean, because there is a lot to talk about.
I mean, Fab is queer or bisexual. She never really says
what
that
she dates. Yeah, she dates men and women. Right. Doesn't identify. I think Lukatsi only talks about women, you know, like in her.
But how empowering is that for a reader who it is somebody who dates various gender expressions and people? We don't hear about any really decent cis guys in this book. Not that I need them to be, but God, like that line about, you know, her going out with a guy who then sends her the invoice for their meal the next morning. And I have personally heard stories of this kind of happening with people I know who've gone on dates. I cannot begin to imagine.
Yeah.
Ugh, gross.
I mean, I've been on some terrible dates in my time. I'm remembering the one where at the end, the woman, it was like a not good date, and she tried to get me, she tried to like give me a coupon code to a local chain restaurant so that she would get like points back if I used her code, and that was her way of like ending the date with me. So
I remember this.
I like forgot it until this moment.
Jeez. I didn't even think about it when I brought that up. I was like, well, did you ever go to Beefsteak?
I never used the coupon code. No.
I think you tried to give it to us.
No, I mean, truly, like, I think if I had, she wanted to give it to everybody. I should have used it. Oh, I'm tearing up. Oh, man.
You know, I mean, and even jumping back to their first date, God, I'm trying to do this in order and I can't. I'm looking at my notes and my notes are all over the place. Like, oh, this refers to that. And, oh, she gave us hints about this before.
Uh-huh.
They start the date with, you know, the 36 questions game. Are you familiar with this?
I am.
36 questions?
Yeah, it's like the 36 questions you ask a person and by the end of it, you'll be in love.
Well, yeah, and then you have to, like, stare at each other for X amount of time.
Right?
Yeah. Side note, just while it's here, have you listened to the musical?
What?
There's a short musical. It's like a 3-episode musical. It's on Spotify. And it has Jesse Shelton playing the female lead and Jonathan Groff playing the guy. And it's about two people who base their relationship on the 36 questions. And then you find out the lies that were told during the 36 questions and then meeting back up later.
A Neil LaBute play? Like when...
No, it's not a Neil LaBute play because I actually kind of like some of this. It's not super chauvinist. I have feelings about him, y'all. And especially the way he talks about women and how his plays age. Anyway, I do like The Shape of Things by him, but that's a moot point. But anyway, the 36 questions, if you're looking for like another source, do listen to the musical. It has some moments. But you know, Lukacs doesn't have time to pull it up with bogusness. So she's like, well, we're going to do a ninth of it. I'm going to ask you 4 questions. And the whole time I'm kind of listening to this didactic breakdown and this, let's get to the root of it. Let's do these things. You are one of the people and one of the voices that I was able to project people in my life who would maybe have very diplomatic communication this quickly. Not that I'm trying to use royalty and diplomatic in the same sentence, but it worked very well for me. And what works better, and we fast forward, is, you know, it's when it's, you know, you're falling for somebody, not when you want to keep physically being with them, but when you want to talk to them to get to know more about them. And what an amazing and beautiful way to express mm-hmm. companionship and wanting to, the intimacy between people besides like just the physical, and wanting to actually understand what makes that person tick. Yeah. I just thought that was, I think I audibly sighed when I read that. I was just, it just, what a compliment. What yeah. a compliment to the two of you and how you engage with each other to be, yeah, we're really hot together and I want that too. But we need to hydrate, so let's get to know each other a little bit more.
I thought that was beautiful. I had one moment that I wanted to talk about. It's kind of, it's in winter, and they're wandering. They're sort of being spontaneous and enjoying New York together. There's a moment where, which I thought was very prescient, they're walking and they're sort of talking about like the statues and like the buildings that are named after people and that kind of weirdness. And I thought it was just brilliant because we're getting two different versions of New York, and we're getting two very different experiences of America and like Black America. You have Fab, who's has she refers to herself elsewhere in the book as like the Americanized daughter, you know, the one who's sort of by necessity of survival been separated out emotionally from some of the things that her parents still hold dear. And then you have Lukacs, who is from another country and is visiting. And I thought that the point of her looking at this cityscape and at these statues and at sort of the people who are upheld and marveling at it and thinking, this is so odd, like, who are these people? They don't care about us. We don't care about them. I thought that was just a brilliant way to bring in a cultural conversation in a way that didn't feel like the author was trying to. This was a very, like, it was one of those things that it was just really brilliantly done. And especially with everything that's happening right now with statues coming down all over the world, it, even though the basis of the story, which has to do with royalty, and it very much sets it in today and makes it so contemporary, and reminds us that there are stakes to their relationship. You know, there are bigger things than just will they or won't they happening in the world around them, which I thought was valuable. I think it added a lot to the story.
Lakotsi mentions when they're passing the financial district about the statues that are towering over it. And there's a line that says she never understood the veneration of these men who took their biases and made them into a country's laws. But America was quite strange after all. There's a lot of stuff in the financial district, so who knows where that pinpoint necessarily was, but it doesn't really matter because the idea of lifting up anybody in that capacity for something other than arguably changing the course of fate to be better than it was before is always what are we lifting up? It was really good. It struck really hard. New York is a character in this book. Like we follow these two women and eventually kind of family members and other people sporadically and members of the service industry. There's a great scene with the elevator operator with
Bob. In spring, she's at the Plaza Hotel. You know, seeing where Fob is staying seeing where Lakotsi is staying, you know, it was supposed to be one night, it's turning into two, and there's a great scene like with the elevator operator who's staring at her, and Fob sort of feels out of place because she, you know, that there's like a separation between this like cold, staid elegance that's so
Plaza.
Yeah, I mean, like,
Waldorf Astoria.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and also, like, whiteness. Like,
I don't know what your experience was when you ingested that part of the text, but there was this thing of when you carry yourself and pull yourself in, but also you're not going to let somebody staring at you pull you down, and you're led to believe it may be because of. And then we eventually find out very quickly the elevator operator is a fan and like follows
Bob on Instagram or Instaphoto.
and she, her body immediately relaxes and she leans in and she's like, oh, because you are inherently taught to assume that is the narrative is going to be harsher than that and less inclusive than that, because that is the majority of the narrative. But what that permission looks like, and then where the two of them bond over being people who most are like within the service industries and work really hard for a living and do the things they want to do, and that connection that unifies them. Mm-hmm. And she kind of flirts and says, you know, well, I'll post something special and it'll be aimed at you tomorrow. And he shares some information about the hotel suite. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, people do come in and out of it all the time, but it hasn't been too heavy lately. And, you know, when you're trying to parse through the person you're with, and if you're just a pawn in their game, and there's so many little things that are just so rich, just so wonderfully rich in this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pull you a minute.
Okay.
And I want to talk about the sex scenes. You down?
All right, let's do it.
All right. Down's probably not the right way. I should have asked you that. I apologize. So the first time we get the two of them together, it is on their first date. Mm-hmm. We both know that I'm always here for a positive first date sex scene because I think it's so negative in the community. And anytime you show it consensually, get it. Mm-hmm. We get a little bit of fade to black for quite a bit of it. Yeah. And at first I was like, well, it doesn't bother me. And then I was like, why doesn't this bother me? It always bothers me other times. And I think, you know, it's like, well, I don't know if it's going to be the whole novel or what's going on, but maybe the reason it doesn't bother me is because we still have this heavy thing going on in the jump scenes in winter. I'm like, okay, well, maybe they can't just, because it was on the first date, Cole can't just give us everything up front, so to speak. So what's going on with that? Mm-hmm. But then the payoff at the end is like 100%. What'd you think, Caitlin?
No, I mean, I, like you, don't enjoy typically a fade to black, but I thought the fade to black of their first date was, as you said, a useful device, because we, at that point in the, as a reader, we hadn't learned the why. We hadn't learned why Fob ghosted her. We hadn't, you know, we didn't have that backstory. We didn't even really know, like, what built their connection beyond this first day. And I think when we finally do get the a winter sex scene, because spoiler alert, they come together, and we do get that more involved moment of intimacy.
Sorry, for like the fourth time on this podcast did you say the phrase come together?
Yes.
I'm keeping it. I'm not editing in this time.
Anyway, they do come together, technically. If we want to be real technical about it, they do. There's some great, like, mutual stimulation happening. But finally, when they finally have this moment of intimacy that I feel like we earned it. You know, we earned it as a reader. They earned it because they worked through their stuff. Like, it makes the lack of one in the beginning makes one in the ending seem more positive and real. And I also think I was thinking a lot about memory as I was reading this, because we have two characters, we're seeing through their eyes, and we don't just have the time gap of winter to spring, and they're two different. We also have Lacazzi, who in winter is remembering Fab and remembering their moments. And, you know, she's only remembering half the story. So there was something about the fade to black of that first sex scene where I was like, okay, that makes sense, because it's a memory. And, you know, like, you don't remember the nitty gritty probably of, like, the first time you have sex with your person. You know, you don't remember, like, what you did and what positions you do, but you remember the feelings. And that's what I got from that scene.
I'm trying to think now if I can say in my... I'm not going to share that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can do broad brush, which I think Cole gives us. She gives us, like, a broad brush, but... Yeah, no, I was here for this fade to black. I think... I feel the same way about this. No, that's me being petty. That's me being petty.
No, finish. Come on, petty. I want
to
hear.
I was saying, like, I feel the same way about the fade to black as I do about the fact that this is a novella and not a novel. Like, it works. I like it. It's fine. Like, I get it and I like it, but I do. You always want more, and
Yeah. I mean, I think it's completely acceptable to say you want more. Always say what you want.
So I have a question for you. So you've read some Cole before this,
but nothing else in this world.
Did this make you want to read more from this series?
Yes, actually, because I really, in reading this one, I really wanted to go back and read the first one, because I'm assuming the moments we get in spring are highlighted in the first book, and we'll have, I don't know if Lacazzi makes appearances or we hear about any of this in the first book, because the ball that she didn't attend, where Lacazzi was going to tell her what her job was and things like that, it all just seemed to be lining up to the prince that she is the head person for. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it did. Plus, after just... This is my second Cole book, and just, you know, her presence on Twitter and stuff. I just want to consume more of her work. It feels exciting to find somebody new. And I'm usually not the biggest person to be like, yeah, bring on the heterosexual romance. It's not usually my jam, but I think that might change for a minute. I'm super intrigued. I don't know. I don't think I have to. Cole doesn't strike me as the person who would make me sit through like 15,000 throbbing member scenes. You? Any interest?
Yes, I want to read this series. I'm really interested in the reviews for the rest of the series that I've read, especially talking about representation, not just of race, but of sort of non-binary individuals, trans individual, like all of those are things that I want to read more of. I want to see more in my lesfic. And if it's not necessarily going to be in my lesfic, then, you know, fuck it. Like, give me a good story and let me sort of drill down into it. is my very inarticulate way of saying, like, yes, I'm gonna read more of Alyssa Cole.
You slayed it. Excitement is always articulate because it's energy.
And we're often excited.
Take that as you will. No, that didn't sound right. That's not what I meant. Welcome back, Caitlin. It's been a few weeks. The double entendres are not helping. We didn't talk about the underwater Ferris wheel. We didn't talk about, like, the elevator almost style museum of weird things people have put into parts of their body. We didn't get into family structure and how generations and different cultures break, or the Creole use of her mom's language and the cut of that. There's
so much.
There's
so much. And I think I want to read more. It's like, I want to read more of Cole's work, because this was on its face, like, it was lesbic. It was lesbian romance. Well, I don't, one of them, I don't think
identifies. It's WLW. It's women loving women. Not to erase anybody's sexual orientation. Yes.
Thank you. But it was also a look at, which we haven't even gotten a chance to talk about, it was a look at a kind of queer experience that you and I don't necessarily have, which is when you're queer, but you also, how do I put this? Sort of like being a queer person within a specific cultural group that you have different facets of your identity that don't necessarily piece together. And I was really struck by Fab's kind of, she got so wrapped up in Spring and her romance with Lukatsi that she forgot to check her phone for a whole day and, like, missed a really pivotal family moment. And, you know, it didn't even occur to her to say, like, well, you know, like, I'm busy because I'm with this person, because that wasn't even an excuse, you know, because in her family comes first. And it's just, it's a different queer story than, like, a powerful ice queen who works herself to the bone, you know, like, it's just different. The stakes are different. The layers of it are so different. Like, this is just such a rich interpretation of queer identity.
Yeah, and we do get the scene in the epilogue where Lukatsi does meet the family. There's been a moment of reunification too. Like, there's really a happy ending on a happy ending in this. But that, you know, I think a lot of times when I hear narratives with Black voices, it's always super depressing in some way. And there was nothing really within this text that was depressing to each character. There were systems that were oppressive around the characters, especially around Fob and the American immigration system and things like that. But there isn't any queer hate or lording of things. And the way that religion is spoken about, and arguably multiple faiths are spoken about within the course of this. And we get those through Lukatsi's family mostly, because one parent believes in honoring the Christian holidays, but through Lukatsi, we always get admiration and thanks to the goddess. And there isn't too much dialogue on top of that. There isn't too much explanation beyond it. And maybe it's in book one. I need to go find out. But, you know, there's never a moment of what is often used as stereotypical Black voices that we've encountered so far in these novels, often written by white authors. So that, you know, that's a problem too, when somebody who is not of a population that doesn't get as much exposure tries to write as if they understand it. So yeah, a lot works. I'm enamored. It made me miss New York, and very few things make me miss getting lost in New York in the middle of the cold. But this novel felt like, sometimes you read novels in New York and you're like, oh, they just kind of like New York. And then you read novels and you're like, oh, this person understands what it's like to live in New York. They understand what it's like to be one of millions, you know, and faceless in New York and still feel like you're the only person in the city. And it is its own love letter to New York.
It really is. And it made me really... I got a little not emotional, but maybe emotive For the last time I was in New York, and I, you know, I was with someone, and like how the certain type of dynamic that your relationship takes on when you're trying to navigate New York City, whether you live there or not, whether you're familiar, like there's something there. And I think every person has had that experience of like navigating a city, even if it's familiar or it's new, with a person who makes you see it all in a totally new light. Mm-hmm. That, damn it to hell, Alyssa Cole. This was for you. We were supposed to do wrap up 10 minutes ago.
So we'll keep talking when we stop recording, you and I. Yeah.
Yeah.
We usually wrap with things we're reading or watching or doing, whatever.
I want to wrap on my end with the yet-to-be-announced book that we're going to be talking about next, which is Southern Comfort by Sky. And
more food, Kaylin.
I know. I'm so excited. I can't wait. I can't wait. So that's what I am going to be reading this week. What about you, Rebecca?
I'm reading a lot of nonfiction right now, and I've dived back in to attempting to understand a little bit of femme theory that went over my head a decade ago for a different project. But yeah, I haven't been reading at the level I usually read. Been beta-ing a little bit, which is new and exciting. And a unique experience. I've had the opportunity in life to read plays in their earliest drafts for playwrights, but reading HEAs in their earliest drafts is, I'm having a good time. I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to overshare because I don't know what I can and can't say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aww. I'm reading for this podcast, and everything else has been for a creative writing class that I'm in. So I think you and I both very much have craft and like writing on the brain. You can kind of tell.
Congratulations on creating things. That's Thanks. Super cool, Caitlin. That's awesome.
We will see. It's like how to write to get people to care about art, and art is very subjective. You know, you can write about anything. So I chose to write about an artwork that hangs in my place of work and has been called out for the past few weeks for being problematic in terms of its depictions of race and queerness. And so that's what I'm writing my workshop piece about.
Congratulations on writing, my friend. That's incredibly difficult to do, no matter when you do it. And kudos to you. You're just, every time I'm like, yeah, Caitlin's a badass, you do something else, I'm like, she's an even bigger badass than I already thought she was.
Rebecca, if people are trying to find you to talk more about any aspect of the book that we've talked about, where can they do that?
I can be found on Instagram at Rebecca Writes a Romance, and you can find me on Twitter at Rebecca ATTT Pod. That's three T's. So it's A Tip the Tongue. So Rebecca ATTT Pod. Caitlin, where do people find you?
I'm kind of nowhere right now. LOL. Ooh. No. Normally I'm on Instagram at Same Sex in the City. I'll start posting again there soon. I have a manifesto that I'm going to drop on there first, so we will see. I'm also on Twitter at Same Sex the City. And if you want to follow the podcast or, you know, just keep updated with our upcoming episodes, we're on Twitter at ATTTPod or on Instagram at A Tip of the Tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So glad we're ooing and swooning and... Mm-hmm. Doing all the cute stuff right now.
I know. I'm glad
else.
We're...
On top of everything else. You can't just pick one or the other.
But... Yeah. I'm glad we're back in the saddle talking about romance. You know? I missed it.
Missed you.
Missed you.